Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, podcast about community theater and the performing arts. And we are here in Bristol, Indiana on a very thunderstormy day. You might actually hear thunder coming through the microphones a little bit later, but we actually have a large crowd here today. We have a couple of guests with us. Actually, our very special friend Geek from the East is Dee Dee Lovejoy right there. And she is the Geek from the East. Geek from the Far East? No. That could be kind of an interesting.
That's
right.
She's a gypsy.
That's right.
Yeah, she travels the world.
There you go. Dee Dee the Magnificent. Thank you for being here today. She's home visiting mom.
It is my pleasure. Yes. Anyway. I am very thrilled about my honorary geek seat.
Now, we have no geek gear here today, unfortunately. No t-shirts, no cups, no mugs, no nothing like that. But
they're anyway. Available for purchase.
They're available for purchase, yes.
I we'll talk to you about that at the end.
At the end of the show. All right. Also, our actual guest and the subject of today's show is Mr. Jeffrey Barrick, who's a scenic painter and artist with Indiana University at South Bend. And he comes over here to our theater, Elkhart Civic Theater at the Bristol Opera House, and does some wonderful scenic painting, oleos, backdrops, all that kind of stuff. And right now, well, welcome to the Theater Geeks, Jeff.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Good.
Don't laugh, David.
We're all excited.
We are. Yeah.
Right now, Jeff is in the midst of, or you're actually here to kind of do some final touch up on, right, on a special oleo drop for a show called Zombie Prom.
The drop is done.
He's
here to fix my problems.
Ah, okay. So there are other issues there. So and now right.
What are your problems?
Jeff can help me with.
There you go. Yes. Dee Dee has her hand up.
Yes. Thank you, Dave. Will you explain what an oleo is?
An oleo is an old-fashioned Italian style of drop.
Right.
Instead of a drop that goes up into the fly, I learned this from Mr. Schaup, actually. Right. It's a style of drop that does not go up into the flies, because in this theater, we don't have flies. An oleo is a specially rigged rolling drop that comes down.
It rolls
and
up
we
on
have
itself.
A, in this particular show, we have, well, they're all oleos, but we have one that's called the Grand Oleo, O-L-I-O, right? Not like
correct.
Oleo margarine.
Right.
It's O-L-I-O, and it's at the very front. It functions to some degree as the grand curtain in this show, and it's painted with zombies on it.
I remember when we had an oleo that dropped down where the grand curtain was,
yeah,
and it had all the names and logos of season advertisers painted on it.
Right. That was, we use that every year for a long time.
We redid it every year.
Now we could do that with a PowerPoint presentation.
That's true.
It's not as fun.
But you can add people mid-season with a PowerPoint presentation too.
If you get them.
Or
if you get Jeff.
There you go. So you trained as a scenic designer, scenic artist, but you knew our previous scenic artist as well.
Rocky Weaver.
I love Rocky Weaver.
And how do you go about learning that craft?
I would have liked to apprentice with Rocky even more than I did, but I started out apprenticing with another artist, Wendy Jo Martin, and we did like window painting and mural painting and stuff like that. So I got used to painting on a big scale. And then I met Michael Cripe, and he said, come work for me at Amish Acres. And I started painting there, and Rocky saw my work and he liked it. Mm-hmm. I think he saw more in me than I had really done yet, like more promise than what I had shown maybe yet. And he said, I want to retire, and so I want you to take over my job. So he brought me over here and introduced me to John.
There you go. Lucky for us.
And I apprenticed with him a little bit, not as much as I would have liked to, but just a little bit. He wanted to do more mural painting and do his own artwork. So he kind of wanted to get out of doing theater work.
Right. Yeah.
I think one of the first people I ever met out here when we came in 72 or something, I walked in and there was this little man standing on top of a ladder, and he was painting a Broadway theater drop for Guys and Dolls, and he had all the theaters and the hotels, and they were all, so it was, if you were standing at the top of Broadway and just looking down the street, and I went, wow.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
was Rocky. Wow. All the time.
He was really good.
Yeah. And he was such a lovely person. Well, yeah. So you're following in his footsteps, and that's really good.
When you're doing a scenic drop or a design like that, I mean, what's the, is there like, what's the, in painting at a large scale, what's the, is there one rule that you always have to keep in mind in something like that?
I'm not sure, except I always think of the fact you have to design for whatever size you're doing something on. Like, I think some people are used to painting on a small scale. And when they go to something big like a mural or a backdrop, they don't realize you got to design proportion to what your scale is.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause then they'll put everything at the bottom and the top. They won't put anything in the middle. It has to all be pulled together. It's no different than doing something small. And you have to think of the same things, filling up the space properly, proportionally, all that mm-hmm. kind of thing. I think that's the most important thing.
And it has to read from the back row. It
has to read as nicely as possible from the back row.
Right.
And not wash out under the lights.
Yeah. Do you use, is it bolder colors? I mean, you've done things that I've seen, like, in fact, when you go to the website accompanying this podcast, I'll have, like, there's a couple of videos that we've done of your work, and we'll have those there, and you can kind of see, because you did a drop a while back and we did a video about it for company. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty much to most eyes, it was a black and white backdrop.
Yeah.
And although there really were some colors in there,
right.
but it was very, very monochromatic feeling. And so, you know, color isn't always it, but is it,
right.
but is it a boldness or what is it?
As far as what I'm thinking about to fill up the space.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In terms of making it read as well.
I have to think about that. I mean, it has to be something that holds together from a distance. Funny thing is about a backdrop is it can be kind of blurry or not perfect close up. And then you hit a certain point from a distance and it all pulls together. So it has to be able to read from a distance. I guess it needs to be clear. It can't be muddled. I guess that's the big thing. It's hard to say because it's almost like it's something that's an internal process. And I don't really think about how I get to that,
mm-hmm.
but it has to read clearly from a distance, and how that happens. I think the basic design has to be clear and balanced.
Right.
When you have that, it'll read from a distance, I think.
Right.
So how, you know, I know what our process is, but let's kind of talk a little bit about the process of how you get started then, because what is it that kind of drives your initial sketches, for example? What is it? Discussion with the designer, discussion with the director? What kind of starts to drive your initial sketch?
We usually have a meeting with John and when I'm here, and I'll talk
or at IUSB.
Or you IUSB. Have a director.
Yeah.
I have a designer there.
Yeah.
And we'll sit down and talk about what, it's a little different because like at IUSB, they have a designer, someone who's designed the set and probably also designed the backdrop if there is one. And so I'm not designing it. I'm just sort of painting it.
And Jeff and I work on a more collaborative type of design situation. I design the sets and I know what I want, but Jeff then steps in and starts bringing a lot of his art background into what our conversation is.
Like when we did Count Dracula, however long ago that was, a long time ago, you guys wanted a crypt, just like a stone crypt.
Right.
And you said that's what you did before. And I thought that sounded kind of okay, but kind of boring maybe. I wanted something a little bit more, theatrical, a higher experience than just a stone crypt. So I did the, that's why I chose to do the sort of angel, dark angel caryatids mm-hmm. that were holding up the arches.
So still one of my favorite drops.
Yeah, I felt like I needed...
Don't you feel sad when you have to paint over them all the time?
Well, that was a hard one because he didn't know we painted over backdrops.
Oh.
And I always used to make... Rocky just always painted his over his backdrops himself. So it was never a thing. I don't know if you remember that.
John does it for me.
But he came in... And he said, well, where's the new backdrop? And I said, no, you have to paint over that for the next show that he painted.
Yeah.
And he said, what? So I made him paint over his first backdrop.
Oh.
And it's like, I didn't feel comfortable making him do that anymore. So now I paint over them when.
But you take a lot of pictures of them, right?
Jeff takes
more
pictures
so
of his
now.
Backdrops.
Yeah.
I didn't take as many then as I do now.
Well, but every show is a different kind of painting. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you don't paint the same for Zombie Prom as you did for Enchanted April.
Right. And a lot of that has to do with what John wants. Like with.
Is it easy to do that, to switch around?
For me,
like that?
Yeah. It is. And I really like having that kind of versatility. Like one time we're going to do patterns, the next time we're going to do an actual scene.
Okay.
You know, and like for Sweet Charity, John said he wanted patterns versus actual scenes. So we didn't want a park scene for the park. He wanted something that felt like maybe we were outside.
And so Jeff looked at vintage wallpaper patterns from the 1960s.
Fabric patterns from the 60s.
And then that's how he created his backdrops based on those patterns.
And some things I lifted directly and some things I altered. Like I would take it and alter the color, alter some of the shapes. Like, so it looked a little bit more like a tree, maybe a little bit more like the wind blowing or whatever it was. And then change the colors to be like outside type colors.
Wow.
Stylistically, what's your favorite genre?
I don't know. I love them all. I like deco and art modern, especially that era of design, I think. But I really like all of them, like that abstract backdrop for company. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. And it was very abstract and very different from anything I've usually ever done. And I really enjoyed that a lot.
That how did you come up with that concept? And because I know that you use the same concept for other things. So just tell us how you came up with that concept.
I saw a picture online of sort of a watercolory, like really runny, rainy looking scene of these buildings outside. And it became very abstracted. And that was basically my inspiration for that. That's what I wanted to use.
Right.
Like very broken down.
And I liked how you said with that particular one that you're kind of getting inside the lead character's head as well.
Oh, we talked about that.
Things were kind
of
not
a little bit psychological. Things were kind of falling apart. Yeah, it was kind of a psychological drop.
Yeah. Wow. As opposed to something that has to be exactly detailed, right? Mm-hmm.
We don't do too many of those. We used to do more of those.
We do.
Which sometimes are fun to do too.
Yeah.
Like the state fair, I had to design the Midway, which I really enjoyed. That was fun looking.
But it took him hours to paint it.
I used to do weeks worth of work on those old backdrops then.
That's what I was going to ask. If you have what's the actual canvas size of, say, your typical oleo?
Out here, what are they, like 18?
Our oleos here are 18, usually 18 by 10, but the grand oleo is 18 by 14.
So how long does it take you to, from start to finish, do you trace it? Do you trace it in sections? Do you use is old school overhead projector, or do you you paint each a section at a time or a color at a time? And what's the whole process out in terms of hours? How long is that?
Usually I'll do my original design or sketch, and then John will approve it or disapprove it.
Or we rework it.
Rework it a little bit. Usually things go from the original sketch. Sometimes we'll alter things, or I'll have to alter things once it gets up on the backdrop. So I got off track there. Let's see. And then I'll take my drawing that's been approved, and I'll make a transparency of it. I used to just stick it in the opaque projector.
Right.
But now I make a transparency, which projects much better, more clearly.
So you trace it onto...
And trace it onto the backdrop.
Projecting it from that old school thing, the overhead projector thing, we used to have in third grade.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd do without those.
I know. And I think some, the larger scenic companies, I think still grid.
Oh, really?
So, which is the old school, which is where they actually grid out a foot by foot pattern on the backdrop itself. And then they paint or they draw each grid individually.
Whoa.
And it's very time consuming. I'm not quite sure. It never worked for me.
It would be so time consuming to do that. I can't. Yeah. And the backdrop moves some too, and trying to draw a grid on there, it'd be so time consuming. It just would not be worth it. Sometimes I already spend too much time anyway, more time than I should perhaps on some of the drops. And then to also grid it besides, that's too much work.
After you have the thing traced on from the transparency,
usually in chalk.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer chalk.
I had a pencil in your hand.
I used to do pencil, or I used to do like thin down paint is what I used to always do. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't working as well. And with chalk, you can get a more accurate line. You don't have to press as hard either. And it's especially the best thing to use for outlining like lettering, because you get a straighter line. You can drag a straighter line with chalk than you can with pencil.
Oh, okay.
So start to finish, then you paint it. So a typical 18 by 14, is that what you said?
That's our grand oleo, 18 wide, 14 tall.
From tracing to finishing, how many hours is that?
It depends on the drop, and depends, because some are bigger, some are smaller. I mean, it depends. Sometimes I can get something done in, it depends on what it is, maybe a day or two. But usually it's much more than that. I'm not sure how long this current one was,
You did the town and the...
Yeah, for Zombie Prom, Jeff.
Yeah,
Brock initially kind of started the whole process of comic booky, and then Jeff really took it, and that's why Jeff is back here today with me, because I want him to take three or four of the pieces that I've designed that I can't quite get that technique, because I want it to kind of match more like what Jeff has done, but he's going to help take those pieces and make them more comic book oriented.
So they look a little bit more like what's there now.
But he did
a little more illustrated looking.
With two zombies.
Yeah, the comic book one. Yeah.
When you work at IUSB, do you actually do any sort of mixed medium, like painting on scrims to incorporate projections, things that are a little bit more intricate than here?
My first backdrop there was on a scrim.
Okay. Yeah.
That was for King Lear, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they were able to do things behind it too.
Do you ever do that, anything like that at the Civic Theater?
Part of the problem here is that we are limited in budget. Like, you know, so we don't have a scrim that we can't go out and buy scrim because it's so expensive.
Right.
I would use it more frequently if I could, because I like how scrim can affect things and how you can do lighting from behind and in front and get all these different techniques.
It's not cost effective.
It's just not cost effective for me. And we're a small stage, but for example, a scrim, for us, the last time I priced a scrim, it was $700, and my budget for a set is only $1,000. So for a musical, so you know, a play is even less. So I have to be just very careful how my money gets spent. So that's why Jeff and I always kind of have to talk about budget as well, because I only have a limited amount of money that I can also offer Jeff. So I have to use his time wisely.
And I always use, whether it's a scrim or a regular backdrop or oleo, I always use watered down paints. I always use washes. Sometimes, very, very rarely will I use the paint right out of the can.
Really?
Because I need it thinner. For one thing, I need a good flow with it, with the brush. Mm. And I also need a certain amount of transparency to get the look I want. Like sometimes you cannot get the look you want with just paint right out of the can all the time. You can't do that.
What's your favorite one that you've ever painted?
There's getting to be more of them now, but,
well, that's good.
But, Count Dracula was one of my top favorites. The one for Company, this new one for Zombie Prom. I have to think there's so many.
I gave you one from Anything Goes.
Oh, the mermaid one. Yeah, that was a good one too.
Yeah. He asked if he could have it as part of his payment.
Because I said, weren't you talking about maybe replacing it anyway?
I don't think
I would have asked otherwise.
It because it was,
took
it was
that
just
whole drop?
Yeah, we cut it. We cut it down. We cut it down a little bit for a while.
Now it's hanging in your bedroom, I'm sure.
It's gone now. It ended up somewhere else, and they took it down. I think it kind of fell and cracked apart a little bit, and so it's gone.
How many different times can you repaint one of those before they're
a lot? A lot, apparently.
They get so heavy.
I spent one summer scrubbing flats.
Really?
Absolutely. In Woodstock, we used them, then we scrubbed them down and dried them out and used them again.
And that was a different kind of paint back then.
Well,
too.
I don't know what it was. I just know.
No, because that would have that. Flats. Yeah, no, they used a different kind of paint in the like theatrical paint up until recently. I guess you can still buy really good theatrical paint. We do not.
I mean, like Roscoe.
Yeah, like Roscoe Brand.
This was back in the early.
But they may have been painting with scenic paint, and that would make a difference. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Because we never ran out of flats because they were always there. We just had to clean them.
Wow.
I like painting flats too. I've done quite a few flats.
Do you almost always use some kind of reference material? Like for the zombie prom thing, you used, like what was an old Weird Science comic book cover plus some other things that you just sort of combined. Conceptually.
Yeah, I kind of combined different parts from like three different comic books.
But like the Company set, and we'll have a picture of that or a video on the website. But that seemed like kind of your own idea. That didn't seem like it came from anywhere else particularly.
I had seen a painting that was very similar.
Yeah.
But if we were to put them side by side, it was really quite different. Mm-hmm. I just used kind of the same idea of it being kind of like falling apart and kind of watery looking. Mine ended up being quite a bit more, I think, fractured or faceted, a lot more faceted. And I also added like dots that were like supposed to be indicative of like street lights, red and yellow lights, and maybe some green. You couldn't really see those too well from a distance, but they were in there. I thought a little bit of color would kind of keep the eye moving whether you saw it or not. So that's why I added those.
I always
have reference material always, because I think no matter what you paint, it's always going to be better if you have reference material to look at than just making something up out of your head. You know, I can make up a comic book out of my head, but it might not be as good as if I was exposed to a 1957 comic book. So I use a 1950s romance comic book as the basis for the zombie prom.
Oh, okay. It wasn't a horror comic book to start
No,
with.
No.
Oh,
it was, those were really popular back then.
Oh, that's romantic zombies. They are romantic zombies.
They're romantic zombies.
Yeah, you know, like last yes. summer when we did Shrek, the Grand Olio and the Sunflowers were all you. I mean, that was just your interpretation of what you and I spoke about and how that came to fruition then, you know. So
those were really fun.
I mean, not you too. Don't always necessarily have reference, although you probably looked at Sunflowers.
Yeah, I did.
That, you know,
yeah. So. I mean, the trees I may have made up completely. But like the sunflowers, I did look at some sunflowers.
Well, that tree backdrop actually was got used kind of twice right. last year because it was initially for Spamalot.
And then, right. Then, I remember
but
that.
You weren't able to paint Spamalot, and yeah. so I painted it.
But I gave you the design.
What a mistake that was!
Oh, really?
And then Jeff came in and painted it again the right way for Shrek.
What did you do?
I just it was it turned out okay. It just wasn't as nice as what Jeff ended up doing.
Well, no,
I'm sure it was fine.
He's a painter.
What are you saying, Marcia?
Did you train
for furniture?
Would you have a degree in scenic design or something like
no,
that?
No, just mostly the two people I had apprenticed with, Rocky Weaver and Wendy Martin. Like I'd spent time painting windows. Rocky, I wish I got more direct instruction from Rocky on scenic painting, and I didn't. Like I think he really just really, really wanted to get out of it ASAP once he stopped. And he helped me paint a drop over at the Bikeman Performing Arts Center, uh-huh. a great big one. And after that, he just would appear occasionally and we'd talk on the phone a little bit, but that was pretty much it. But there's some drops he did, like the park drop that you still have, mm-hmm. that was very, very loosely done. I've never really done a drop like that. I wish I would have asked him, how'd you do that drop? Can we do something like that so I can understand that technique? Because I don't understand that technique.
We really. Still use the backdrop from time to time. That's it. It was it's his last so backdrop pretty. That he did. Yeah. And it's just a nice little park.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a certain tech, that real loose technique is a very particular technique, I think, in theater and scenic painting. I'm not quite sure how to do it, you know, because it's like, it's being very loose, but very, very deliberate in your marks. And I'm not really sure how he did it. You know, I could probably try, I'm sure, but it's a beautiful watercolory sort of feel a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
I can't remember what we used that for initially.
I think the first time it was painted was for Where's Charlie?
I think you're
maybe,
right. I think you're right.
Which was a very unfortunate show, but it was a great backdrop.
Great backdrop.
So, no, it's just
it came
not a good
way
show.
Whistling the scenery.
it's not a great show.
Whistling the scenery. There you go. That's
there
a good. That's
go.
A good.
Yes.
I don't know. That's an interesting concept. So anyway,
do you have anybody that works with you that can kind of carry on when you move away? Or
do you have an apprentice?
Yeah. I've had a couple people from school, a couple other students who've helped me. Both of them have helped me once, I think. And they've offered to work for free, but I don't usually go for that. I don't think that's really fair. So I usually don't have someone help me. But I enjoy having someone around to pass on the information to who wants to learn. I think that's really fun. Both people I've had help me have been very, very good. But
you
I feel
had,
like unless
you had one of them here for when you did the, was the Shrek storybook, the Olio, right?
The Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, that
Once
was Tiffany. And before yeah. that, I had Brandon help me the year before.
Right. Yeah. 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 We did a little time lapse thing on the,
yeah.
On
yeah. That was fun. That
painting the, watching it go up in right. just a yeah. few minutes.
Yeah. It was cool for me to see too. It was fun yeah. to see it come together.
Yeah, yeah. That was a new backdrop last summer.
And yeah. Then,
but we've painted over it twice since
oh.
now.
Oh, so, geez. Yeah. yeah.
But this was, we don't waste anything, do we?
Jeff is trying to decide whether or not he likes this backdrop enough that maybe I should cut it down and have to build a new one.
Oh, I think you should try to sell it or rent
the
it.
Zombie
oh, rent
one?
It. Yeah. Renting
I
it would be,
the
it would
zombie
be cool.
Prom
yeah.
one yeah. You sent me pictures of.
Right. Yeah. We'll have,
I'm not the town because I know that's, but the
that's
other
plywood
one.
Yeah that's
oh my
plywood.
Lord I yeah. love that one
so will you stay what's the career path for a scenic painter where do you try to are you trying to like get into a bigger market or do you just like what you're doing or what
I would like to do some more designing mm-hmm. you know and continue to paint and maybe I'll also have some people apprentice with me and pass on some more information on how to
right.
scenic paint
yeah.
I'd like to do a workshop or something about scenic painting, but I would like to design more, actually design
right.
like a set.
Well, you were
like
talking
that.
About trying to learn a technique from Rocky, and it seems like that's it. You know, you could learn it from Rocky, but like then you said you'd have to do it so you could understand
right.
it. You really can't understand scenic painting unless you're doing it.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't seem like something you can just like read up on. You
right.
know?
Because like at school, I'm not teaching a class, but sometimes I have students come who will paint with me, and I need to do a certain technique. but that requires me showing them how. And the thing is, it took maybe quite a few years to learn how to do that. And someone can't necessarily learn it right on the spot.
Right.
Like even in 5 or 10 minutes. So I kind of end up having to do the whole thing sometimes.
Right.
But yet they're there to learn. So it's kind of a weird thing.
But it's also, well, for, but also for you.
To, yeah.
Also for you trying to figure out, okay, how can I teach this
how
to
do
someone?
I explain it?
It also kind of, you're analyzing your own technique.
Right.
How do I do that?
Which I hadn't done before.
But you don't necessarily. Yeah. It's kind of interesting to say, oh, gee, I didn't realize that's how I did that. But it, you know, that's the only way to tell somebody how to do it. So that must be what I'm doing. You know,
right.
That,
all of a sudden you have, yeah, I'm sure it's the same thing in acting. All of a sudden you're trying to analyze your own technique, which was totally intuitive before. Now all of a sudden you have to try to explain it to someone, you know, somebody. And it's like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
can't necessarily get it right off the bat.
Right.
Well, yeah. No, they probably have to. The only way you learn is to listen and then try and do it yourself.
Yeah, you know? That's about it.
But I do think being exposed to someone else doing it can help move you along tremendously. Even if it's on a more subtle level, somehow you've gotten a bit of that. And it does bump you up a little bit
in terms of fine art. Who are your favorite artists?
For me, it's like, I like it all, like abstract realism, American illustration, everything in between.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just so many, Salvador Dali, Robert Delaunay. I like so many different ones.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause sometimes what you do, you know, scenic painting sometimes feels like, if anybody's familiar with, like with Maxfield Parrish, people, you know, that where it was more of an illustration kind of art, and that, so there's, it kind of crosses the line where it's not necessarily fine art, but it's not schlock. It's somewhere in the middle, you know, and it's more ground, like magazine illustration in some cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it is that sometimes I've thought of it as being like fine art, and then sometimes I think of it as more as illustration. It is that,
but your storytelling, it's part of the story. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy that aspect of it.
And that's why we've talked recently about the fact that you would want to design more. You're actually thinking about designing full shows now, because you're at that point where you'd like to see your whole vision on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when you did Company, I had the impression that, you know, the backdrop was part of it, but I mean, obviously you were working with John, but there was kind of a holistic look to the whole thing. I mean, everything kind of worked together, and I had a funny feeling that you might have been in. And did he get involved in the John? Did Jeff help you with the color selection? Anything
Jeff helped in the color selection only because I used Jeff's painting then to bring the color. I took some of those colors onto the main stage then.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I let him inform me as to maybe what color palette I would choose.
We always discuss colors. I mean, sometimes John will say we absolutely need to have this in it, or he'll say the costumes will be very bright, so we need to have a more toned down backdrop. And so sometimes, like, I'll say, well, maybe we should use these colors, or you're thinking these colors. And so it's usually collaboration.
Yeah, we almost always have a meeting at Panera.
There you go.
We meet at Panera. Okay. We go over the script. We talk a little bit about.
That's why everything looks like a Panera menu.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. Well, hey, we've been talking to Jeff Barrick, scenic painter for Elkhart Civic Theater and others, and it's very interesting. Thanks for being with us. And,
thank you.
So
you might say, if you want to see Jeff's work, come out to see Zombie Prom.
That's right. You can do that if you happen to be in the area. If you live in Pakistan, don't worry about it. Again, at the website, we'll have a couple of videos and perhaps some pictures as well, so that you can kind of see some of the things that we're talking about here on audio. Please remember to subscribe to Theater Geeks. You can get us on the Blueberry Network. You can get us on iTunes. You can get us on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, On Demand Radio, anywhere where fine podcasts are bought and sold. And please stop by our store at theatergeeks.com/store, where you can get hats, cups, mugs, and I'm going to say it this time, Dee Dee's favorite is at the store. What is Dee Dee's favorite at the store?
The coffee mugs.
Okay, like mother, like daughter. There you go.
Well, that's the only thing she's had.
And the clock.
The
clock.
I hear there's a clock.
There's a clock. There's underwear. Okay, all right. Anyway, so stop by there. Pick up all your geek gear and you'll really enjoy it. Again, thanks to Jeff Barrick for being with us, and thanks to Dee Dee for joining us. And I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shelp.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.